Sick of procurement bottlenecks? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement, so your business keeps moving and growing. Score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Go to bill.com/procurement200. bill.com/procurement200. Sick of procurement bottlenecks? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement, so your business keeps moving and growing. Score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Go to bill.com/procurement200. bill.com/procurement200.
Hey, you're about to hear our brand new podcast, My Crazy Family. And if you like it, I need your help. To let other folks know that this show exists, we need reviews on Apple Podcasts. So if you got about 10, 15 free seconds, please head over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a quick review, and I'll make it worth your while. Send me a screenshot of that review, and I'll enter you into a contest to win a $500 Amazon gift card. So leave the review on Apple Podcasts, send me the screenshot to contest@crazyfampod.com. That's contest@crazyfampod.com. And later in the year, we'll randomly pick someone for that $500 Amazon gift card. So please leave that review at Apple Podcasts, then send me the screenshot. contest@crazyfampod.com. And thanks. Hey, Stacey, have you ever had anyone in your family claim to hear divine voices?
Oh, I've got a couple of family members who think somebody speaks to them.
It's always exciting when someone says, I heard this from God. And yet they're still complete abusive assholes to their family. We got that one and much more today on My Crazy Family.
My. Crazy.
Crazy.
Family.
Family.
My.
Crazy.
Family.
Welcome to the program. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcast. Leave us a review there on Apple Podcasts. We could not do this thing without you. Thank you guys so much for checking out our show again. Hope you guys have been enjoying binging it. We love putting these things out for you. And if you have a crazy family story, we want to hear it. Just go to crazyfamilypod.com. There you can just write in and share your story. The form is right there. You just click send and then we get it and we may discuss it on a future episode. Do it 100% anonymously or in your own voice. I'll even disguise it if you want. Just let me know at the beginning of the call. Hey, please disguise this. You'll be disguised. 1-833-CRAYFAM. That's 1-833-CRAYFAM. 1-833-272-9326 to share your crazy family story with us. Tony and Stacey Cole with you on today's episode of the program. What's going on?
Well, and the other thing I'd like to point out, you are amazing at disguising voices. You have the ability to really, really disguise voices.
I could. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of ways I can describe a voice. I could even have someone else. I could have it sound like Casey Kasem is reading your story. So don't worry about your family finding out. We can easily, you know, hide you. Just don't name any names and, you know, we're all good.
Yeah. Fake names. You're all set to go.
It's been interesting seeing people write in and say, it was incredibly therapeutic. I'm really glad I got that out there. Just because it is. It's good to get some of these things out because a lot of times you feel like, oh, God, there's no family that's crazier than mine. It turns out, yeah,
there is.
There's a lot. There's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, they say that writing things out, journaling, things like that, that can really be helpful. So think of this as journaling on steroids, that we're sharing it and not to embarrass anybody, but to just get it out there that, like you said, you know, you think you're alone a lot of times, you're really not.
It's a lot like what I was hearing at the beginning of when I started Real Ghost Stories Online, one of the other podcasts that I do, where at the beginning, people were like, I can't, this is so wonderful. I can share the story of my experience that was paranormal because no one else I feel like I can talk to will get it. I think people are finding the cathartic, ness of all of this by being able to share these things on this sort of a platform in a group. It's like group therapy. We called it group therapy for the paranormally affected back then. It's group therapy without a therapist, essentially. We're just kind of all letting out our stories and then slowly waiting for our families to find out and then disown us. So,
well, sometimes that's not a bad thing, though.
I'm glad, you know, there's, it's always interesting because there's so many times where you really feel like you're alone on it, and then you let it out like, oh shit, well, this is pretty tame compared to everybody else. But yeah, please do share your stories. Crazyfampod.com is the website. So what do we got going on this week for Crazy Families?
Oh boy, here we go. All right, our first one. And this, we've heard a lot of great stories. This one, I'm going to tell you, struck me because of how well written this is. I'm not exactly sure if we're talking about a male or a female, but whoever this person is did an amazing job of writing out their thoughts and feelings to the point where if they wrote a book, I would want to buy this book.
Really? Okay.
I am not kidding. So here we go. In the not too distant past, I had a mother-in-law, or at least the closest variation that my then sanctity of marriage co-destroyer and I would have had allowable by law. The fact that we couldn't be married, I later learned, was a piece of mercy. What first struck me upon arrival at her place was the kitchen. It was entirely done in what appeared to be a cow spot motif, accented by badly done sponge work that could be only achieved by heterosexuals reaching for that always elusive level of country kitsch, a veritable cornucopia of chintz. Seriously, this is just the best writing. When I first met her, I realized that I was in the presence of something unique. Not unique in the way that one might think of artwork or cleverly turned phrase, but unique in that special brand of insanity one simply cannot help but drink in amidst the silently growing horror, quietly making note of all the exits and nearby blunt objects that might be used to quickly render someone unconscious. Okay, so I just figured out we're talking about a female here.
Yeah.
So she had just returned home from buying a pair of plain white sneakers. After a millisecond of thought, she went onto the porch, produced a can of metallic gold spray paint, and went to town on them. Her mannerisms and my ex's behavior were that this was perfectly normal. Hell, who doesn't like to plaster layers of shiny dye onto newly bought footwear?
Yeah.
She finished, paused, and seemed to think, are these attention-seeking enough? Absolutely not. When she was finally done, the gilded shoes had hot glued to them every square centimeter, 10-carat plastic rhinestones. A veritable sustained supernova of crazy, compelling, demanding attention. I had initially thought, well, maybe she's just a bit quirky. The adjective I was searching for, I would later discover, was histrionic.
This is okay.
We had talked about histrionic a couple podcasts ago. So I just wanted to point out that it is a personality disorder, a mental health condition marked by unstable emotions, a distorted self-image, and an overwhelming desire to be noticed. People who have this often behave dramatically or inappropriately to get attention. So this beautiful email goes on to say, the obligatory guilt-induced visit came to feel like a bit of a punishment, and I regarded them with anxiety and dread. I fucking love this writing.
Yeah.
Okay, she goes on to say, if this illness was limited to her penchant to look like a frumpy Carmen Miranda dipped in glitter, that might have been tolerable. But there was also an evil there that left me with the quiet relief that she was not a gun owner. She lived in a small town about 90 miles away from where we lived at the time, where kids at the local high school drove their tractors to class. Deliverance, banjos on the left, pretty mouths on the right. These people gave her a wide berth. In town, children's hands were snatched and pulled close by their parents, toddlers picked up entirely, and as always, a willful and concerted effort to avoid all eye contact at all costs. Needless, these visits generally required me to take 2 milligrams of Xanax and 3 Excedrin about 60 minutes before arrival. That way, the shimmering aura that is Axis 3 persona was lessened to a muffled scream. Seriously, whoever you are, write a fucking book.
Yeah, that would be great. Oh my
God. And sadly, the email ends right there. Yes.
Well, they had a great way of describing their family.
Oh, it's just it's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful and so sad all at the same time.
It is. And, you know, are they still together?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. You really don't know unless they would have stated that. But that's a very difficult personality disorder to deal with if you're the significant other or the caregiver of that type of person. They tend to have very chaotic relationships. They tend to have very difficulty holding relationships. And if you've been with one for a long time, there's not typically a lot of changing the person would really, really, really have to recognize it, which typically they don't. And it's a hard one to overcome. I mean, in some cases, people are like, yeah, this is, you know, I think there's some sort of medications and stuff out there that can help with that sort of stuff. But I mean, there's a level of this where it's such a, you know, a conditioned behavior that's all they've been operating their entire lives. They have to like look at every situation and go, you know, how would I have handled this and how should I handle this today? And that's a lot. I mean, you're talking like every single thing, like someone says something to you, pause, and you have to rethink what's an appropriate response. Is it to one up it and say something horrible that's happened to me and bring the attention to me, which is typically what a lot do. You'd have to stop and go, I don't want to be that person anymore. But again, you have to be aware that you're even doing that. And
yeah, absolutely. I was so caught up in this email and how beautifully written it was. It says my ex's behavior. So they are not together anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just, you know, I just love this story. I'm sad that she had to go through all of this, but I think she dodged quite the bullet there.
Yeah, I agree. It's a scary one. I mean, you almost kind of start thinking, I mean, you could identify some people as like almost evil, depending on how they're using this, how this disorder is using them to mm-hmm. be. Because I mean, the list of what the people that have this, they're uncomfortable unless they're in the center of attention, dress provocatively or exhibit inappropriately seductive or flirtatious behavior, shifts emotions rapidly, act very dramatically as though performing before an audience with exaggerated emotions and expressions, yet appears to lack sincerity, be overly concerned with physical appearance, constantly seeking reassurance and approval, be gullible and easily influenced by others, be excessively sensitive to criticism and disapproval, have a low tolerance for frustration, and be easily bored by routine, often beginning projects without finishing them or skipping them for one event or another, not thinking before acting, making rash decisions, be self-centered and rarely show concern for others, have difficulty maintaining relationships, often seeing fake or shallow in their dealings with others, and threaten to attempt suicide or get attention. Very similar to borderline. Very similar.
Yes.
A good example of it, which I think she has borderline, would be Amber Heard. Very good example if you're looking for someone with this. I mean, especially not only on the stand, watch some of the post interviews that she did. And she's in this class B is what they are, cluster B of personality disorders that are considered pretty dramatic and are very difficult to deal with. There's a lot of psychologists and therapists who flat out refuse patients like this because they feel that what they can do is not going to be enough, and it just isn't worth, the effort, and it's not worth putting, quite frankly, the person through that as well. If you can never quite get them to the ground that they need to be on to try and start working on this sort of stuff,
you know. And as you were reading that definition, I was thinking Hollywood. I was thinking of actors. I mean, don't you have to have some of this about your personality to be an actor?
I think you have to be somewhat of a narcissist to be an actor, but there's a big difference between like narcissistic personality disorder or borderline or this versus just having a bit of narcissism. We all have a bit of narcissism. It's to what extent does that go and how does it affect others that then leads down the track of, well, is this truly a disorder or is this just, you know, people have weird fucking personality quirks?
Yeah. And quirky is okay. I mean, look at Jim Carrey. He is, you know, he loves to be the center of attention when he's on.
The difference is, I think, in my opinion, if you have just the tendencies of narcissism, you can also have the tendencies of being able to identify it too and say, I don't like that about me. I want to change it. When you actually have the damn disorder and it's so ingrained, you don't have the sense to say, I don't like this about me. I want to do something about it. You have the sense of saying, I don't like everyone else. I want them to treat me differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's where, it's so hard to treat and it's so hard to do anything with, you know, if you have it, I mean, if I had it or something and somebody pointed out and I was cognitively aware enough of it, number one, that's hurdle number one. But if you are aware of it and you're like, I don't even know what I'm doing, but people are telling me this. I mean, certainly try and do something, try and get treatment so you can be happier. And if others are more happy around you and not fearing you, things get better. But it is something that is very difficult to deal with. I think I had a co-host who had this once, and it was like total train wreck once I got to know her even better. And I'd known her for quite a while, too. And then as we were working together day after day, it was like, holy shit.
Well, you never know what you're going to walk into. Everything is just a fucking surprise, it feels like.
It was chaos. It was utter fucking chaos. And it was... it just didn't work. I ended up like leaving the show and moving far away and I never spoke with her again. I do feel kind of bad about that, but I just was like, this person has kind of turned toxic in my life and I don't want toxic. And even though we've had a friendship for a while, I felt it was just time to say good luck. You know, I don't wish anything ill towards her whatsoever, but it was like, holy shit.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with self-preservation too. If you're around somebody like that, and you and I work together with somebody down the hall like this, actually she was on our station for a bit too, but it's just better to be away from that person than every fucking time you open your phone and see a text, you're like, now what?
I remember that. And that was another person that we worked with. That's a totally different person, but yes.
But that, the same thing.
Oh, like, God, that was living hell. And I was like, I was in charge of scheduling and I was in charge of making sure people showed up to work. This is when radio stations actually had people at them. And we were staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, playing CD to CD. So if somebody didn't show up, that former person had to sit there and wait till somebody else got there.
Because in 3 minutes, you had to push another button, push a button for something to happen.
There was no way to walk away. You'd go off the air. There was no automation. There was no computer to do it. You had to do that. But that was hell. I think the person got hired by a sexual pervert, a predator, who ended up getting fired for those reasons. And I remember when they were doing the hiring of that person saying very inappropriate things about the person they were hiring and me going, what the fuck? That was kind of one of my first... I think weird moments with that boss going, this guy's kind of off. That person then every fucking weekend, every time there was a remote broadcast, I mean, at least I would say 8 out of 10 times. Quite often we would have to do a broadcast out at a nightclub on Saturday nights. And this person was scheduled to do that on a kind of a rotating basis. And I cannot tell you the amount of times like it would be 7-8 o'clock at night on Saturday and you have to leave like right then to get to your destination.
Yeah,
I'd be getting a text or a call of, oh, I can't make it. Either I'm sick, my kid's sick, or my boyfriend's sick, or something bad is happening. And there were so many times I was not even in town. And then I'd have to beg somebody to go cover for this person. But they were using medical reasons and that, so you can't really do much about it. And at the time, we're talking early 2000s, so I don't even know what the rules were at the time. It was just more like deal with it. But God, it was a living hell trying to be the employer, the boss of that person. It made me hate management. And one of the reasons I've never gotten back into it, because all the personalities and all the personality disorders that are out there.
Oh, and boy, when you're trying to schedule somebody and they have a personality disorder.
Yeah.
you know, you want to be sympathetic, but you also have a job to do.
Yeah. I mean, and you had to be sensitive because, but it was just out of fucking control.
Yeah. And I remember I had to cover a few times for this person for some remote broadcasts where a company actually pays thousands of dollars for the talent to show up. And you get this call. Like, I remember there was one Saturday I was coloring my hair at home and I literally had hair color in when I got the call that so-and-so isn't coming to her remote. Can you cover for her? And I'm like, okay.
Yep. Yeah.
So I quickly rinsed the brunette crap out of my hair and I showed up there with wet hair because I literally did not have time to dry it because I had 30 minutes to run to the radio station and then run to the location. There was no time. Yeah. There was no time.
Yeah.
And I came flying in, you know, totally came in hot and covered for her. Mm-hmm. And I remember I never even got a thank you. It's like you pull this shit every weekend. I don't know why anybody schedules her for this stuff.
Yeah.
Just frustrating. So I totally get it.
And it was always just looked at as, well, that's how they are. Like, no, this is not okay. Yeah. I mean, there's certainly medical conditions that need to be dealt with, but when you're just turning utterly, you know, otherwise calm workplaces into utter hell, there needs to be, I think, some more discourse or directions that a company can go to and, you know, not be discriminating or anything like that, but you can't have that sort of thing going on. Although today I cannot imagine being in management because I think we almost probably had more leeway back then to discipline someone for not doing their job. And there wasn't just, you know, it's a medical, because there was never like diagnosis of medical condition. It was just this person
does
this.
I'm not feeling well, I'm not coming.
Yeah. And I went to court once for this person.
Yep.
And the utterly silly thing about it was somebody who was kind of stalking this person, but this person would encourage it. And they'd be on the phone, taking the calls, talking to them, writing emails back. Yep. And I looked at some of them and I was like, if I were this person, and I mean, and I was crazy and I'm thinking, I would think this person is flirting back with me too. There wasn't a lot of signs.
Absolutely. There was no reason that this gentleman,
there was no
wouldn't
stop.
Think. Yeah.
There was,
you know, it was, it was just weird, but it was being inappropriate. It was looking for attention where
she became a victim. She got a ton of attention and it totally shits on people who have these real problems where someone is stalking them. They're asking them to stop and go away and they don't. That shit's real. And it happens all the time. This person was actively like, let me open up the gates and look at this. This would be great. Wouldn't that be nice? And it was just like, what the fuck is going on here?
Oh, it was always something. It was always something.
Yeah. It was adventures in radio. I someday I'll write the book about all of the fine individuals we've run across.
My Lord.
Let's see here. Okay.
Our next one.
Yeah.
All right. When I went to college, my family life went downhill significantly. When I was 17, my dad had a heart attack. Following that, he started to eat better, drank a glass of wine each day with dinner. Around the same time, my sister got into weed with her boyfriend at that time and started hanging out with shady people. So I went to college. Things really got out of hand. My sister got into heavier drugs and alcohol. She's 2 years younger than me. My dad had some severe back and tooth pain and started to drink more and more and abusing his pain medications to deal with it. My mom was left dealing with all of this on her own and didn't take it very well. I remember having a really hard time coming home that summer after my first year of college. I was working full time and decided to take my parents to a Tom Petty concert as a late Father's Day gift. At the show, my dad got up to get drinks and asked me if I wanted anything, and I asked for water. He brought me Jack Daniels. I didn't want to drink it. I'd spent the entire day working in the sun at camp, and I was supposed to be driving home. So he drank it and a few others. He started getting sloppy and belligerent drunk. And when we got home, he continued to drink all night. I remember waking up at 6 the next morning to get ready for work, and he was offering me alcohol yet again. My mom and I went to work, and my sister came home after spending the night at a friend's house in the middle of the day to find him passed out at the bottom of the stairs. He got back up and continued to drink for the rest of the day. really obnoxious that night when my mom and I got home. I ended up calling the police because he gets very verbally abusive and throws things. And of course, he put on his innocent act and they couldn't do anything. I left after they did because I didn't want to be abused further. Since that night, things have gotten worse. When he drinks liquor, he gets really nasty. I broke two of his ribs and scratched his face up one night when he went after my mom with a rolling pin. I got behind him and pulled him back, and he fell thanks to being too drunk to keep his balance. He's put himself in the hospital many times, especially in this last year, yet he still refuses to admit that he has a problem. Mm-hmm. My sister, on the other hand, her drug problems got worse. She stole money and valuables from my entire family, pawned off a lot of household belongings, stole two of my credit cards and my dad's ATM card, taught her friends how to break into the house, and I find scorched bent spoons and other drug paraphernalia every time I come home because she hides them in my room. She's been arrested and in jail quite a few times. She's acquired hepatitis C and has been to rehab two or three times. She is only 21.
Mm.
And thanks to all of these stresses, my mom has started gambling. It says, I moved 500 miles away so I wouldn't be in the middle of the drama when I finished school. It's mm-hmm. depressing how different my life is now compared to what it was when I graduated from high school. Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. All yeah. It's one of those situations where unless that person who is drinking can say, I want to stop and do this on their own, and then, you know, get into a program or something, that person's probably not going to stop. And it's going to just continue to be utter chaos in that environment, for, you know, ever. And there's probably some acting out there going on with the sibling, who's, you know, that's basically a coping mechanism for trying to deal with the home life that is like that.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're that young and you've got stuff like that going on, I commend this person for moving 500 miles away mm-hmm. so that you're not exposed to it.
Yeah.
It's okay to walk away from these situations.
Well, you don't know how uncommon, I mean, they are somewhat common, but you don't realize how detrimental they are, I think, at that age. It's shitty. It certainly is. But as you grow and you have more perspective on life and time, you realize just how much damage that sort of behavior does, especially when mm-hmm. it's abusive, and just how that just spiders out and ruins lives. So being able to get away from it sooner than later is definitely a good thing. It's shocking what I learned. I mean, what I was very surprised by, I did not have this sort of abuse or anything in my house growing up, but what I was shocked by was just some more the overall environment of the state of Wisconsin, of the excessive amount of drinking that is looked at yes. as 100% normal. And they don't, like, alcoholism is rarely discussed, ever. I mean, it may be if, like, your family really was affected by it, but a lot of people, I think, are really affected by it, and they just look at it as like, oh, they like to drink. And it's just what otherwise would be looked at in other states as a problem. Very much there, the problem drinkers are just run-of-the-mill normal people, and they don't it's not even looked at as a problem.
No, and a lot of times drinking is woven into religion everything. As well.
Everything. It's woven yeah. into everything in Wisconsin.
Yeah, coming from Minnesota, when I moved here, I started working in our copywriting department, so I was writing ads, and there was a church picnic. And they had given me a list of things to include in the ad, and it talked about
liquor,
several kegs of beer and stuff. And I left that out because being from Minnesota, you don't talk about alcohol and God in the same sentence.
Yeah, not in Wisconsin.
Well, the ad got sent back to me immediately. You need to include the beer. And yeah. I'm like, it's a church picnic.
Yeah.
And they no, you need to highlight the beer, God. Is what I was told.
Yeah.
I shit you not. Drinking for Jesus
oh, yeah.
is a thing in Wisconsin. Fuck yeah.
I remember going to the church picnic at a Catholic church because my dad was brought up Catholic. My mom was Lutheran. And I remember going to like the church picnics at my dad's church, and they were so much more fun than the Lutheran picnics.
Yeah, they are.
Because they were all drunk.
Yep.
And they had games for the kids, and it's all the dads just wandering around with their families. And there really wasn't like, there wasn't violence as far as I saw. There wasn't any sort of like really extreme behavior. It was actually a lot of real, I have fond memories of these sort of things where everyone was drinking pretty heavily. And as a kid, you're having your Shirley Temple, or as we called them, kitty cocktails there.
Yep.
And you are like in the bounce house that's 120 degrees and you're going to die because your parents forgot to come get you again. So you have to wander out of the bounce house. This is bounce houses when they were completely enclosed in like the 70s and 80s when they were death traps. Today, they can just go flying into the sky if they're not anchored down. Back then, you'd roast to death. So you got to kind of pick your poison there of how you want to go. Falling from the sky at ridiculous heights or burning to death. Or being trampled by other children who might be drunk because the dads are like, here, have a sip of this, have a sip of that. You run out of there. There's games to play. There's prizes to be won. Every dad has a beer in his hand and mom. And then you go into the church and you have pie that the old ladies made. And they're delicious pies because these are old German women who make everything from scratch, and they got a beer in their hand. And then you go to the other room and there's gambling. There's bingo you can play.
Yes.
And then they all got their daubers and you can win all sorts of prizes at bingo with your beer right there. It really, then you go out on Saturday or Friday nights in Wisconsin to a supper club, which is basically just a restaurant with a really large bar and a reason for mom and dad to drink before they go have dinner. And there's double bubble, which means it's not just one drink, you get two drinks for the price of one. And they give them both to you at the same sitting. So you're like, okay, I ordered an old fashioned. You get two old fashions brought to you at that moment. So then you chug down your two old fashions. I'll have another, and you get another two. And you
have
four.
Empty stomach.
And then you end up having like six drinks before you have dinner.
Yep.
And then you go to dinner. And then you probably have another old fashioned or two. And oh, look, double bubble's still going on. So they bring two drinks out to you.
Well, and don't forget, too, this is all taking place in a bar and kids are allowed in the bar.
Oh, there's games. I remember each bar, what arcade game they had.
Oh.
It was fun. And it was a treat. And I looked forward to it. And when I look back on those memories, because there was not abuse in my family, there wasn't physical abuse or anything like that. And for the most part, there was nothing negative about going to these places. The people were very friendly. I grew up with this idyllic image of like people drinking to excess, and it was like happy. And it's such a weird thing because so many people, when they're surrounded with that sort of stuff, they're like, oh my God, and this person did that. Now, there wasn't these sort of things going on in my house, but when we went out, that was just normal life. And it took leaving to go, oh, this isn't normal.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, it's just a weird thing. And especially when you mentally, you know, you crave things that are going to be warm and happy, and it's like comfort food. The idea of going to a bar like that has been like comfort food for me. So I bet that's something I've had to watch throughout my life because it's like, oh, I want to feel warm and cuddly, drink. And it brings me back to those happy memories, but that can get out of control really fucking quick too. It's just a very weird conditioning that people from Wisconsin have. And I really get kind of disgusted with like the shirts that are like drink Wisconsinably.
I hate that shirt.
It's like one thing if you're like 18 and you're dumb and you're just, you know, being dumb. But it's another if you're like 42 and hawking the shirts. It's like you've had enough life to live to see the damages that shit can do. It's maybe not something to like encourage or kind of laugh about because it's destroyed so many lives.
Exactly. And it gets a little cringy to me, especially when football season comes around. You've got the Packers and the Badgers. It is just another excuse to drink. It's not just, hey, there's a game. It's we're going to fucking party on this Sunday.
Yeah.
And then Monday, I may or may not be at work because I'm so hungover.
Yeah, I remember doing live broadcasts outside of Lambeau Field when I was working for a station in the Green Bay area. And we would do, I mean, there'd be a lot of Sunday games that started around like 11 or noon. And
people were blasted by 9.
We'd have a remote broadcast in a bar at like 7 a.m.
Yep.
And there'd be like a former Packer that would come and talk with us. And you would think it was like midnight on Saturday night at that bar. And it was packed and people were blasted. I don't even know if like people left the bar from the night before. I think technically you legally were supposed to, but I don't know that that happened at some places. And wow. And it was just, but again, I thought it was normal. And then you go to a bar or something to watch a game and maybe you're getting there like lunchtime in another state. And like, oh, everybody's really big into their teams there. And it's nothing like Wisconsin. It's just no, you don't know. You don't know until you experience exactly what they go to extremes. The other horrible part of it was if the Packers lost a game, domestic violence would go up dramatically those days. And as did drunk driving and car accidents. I was working at a station in Green Bay in high school. It was a big top 40 there and WIXX. And then I was working Sunday afternoons. It was like my weekly shift when I was in high school. So I'd be there when the games were letting out and I usually had to drive on the highway around the same time. And I just try and get out of there before the games let out so I could beat the rush. But if you got stuck in that, it was just ridiculous. I mean, people are swerving every which way and it's like a 4-lane highway. And I would purposely sit at the station later those nights and just hang out waiting for the traffic to be gone so I felt safer driving home.
Oh, and that's not an exaggeration. When the game ends, you need to be careful on the road anywhere in Wisconsin. And I know that sounds like I'm really just putting a blanket over the whole state, but the way people follow this football team and a lot of the drinking that goes on, it's not safe to be on the road when that game is done.
No. And like everything shuts down too. It's almost like it's a holiday. That was, so if you ever watch NFL games and they're showing Packer games, one of the funny scenes that they used to show, they'd put like a live cam at like the local mall when people used
There's nobody there.
When people used to go to the mall and nobody's there, the streets are empty. And it really is like everybody's, if there's anything that makes people watch television in that state in a combined effort, the way people used to watch TV, that's the only thing that still exists. It's Packer games. But it's, it's interesting. Anyway, that was a tangent. What do we got for our other one?
No problem. No, I feel you. All right. Our next one is my dad is and was crazy. He believed if we were driving somewhere and there was a red light on the way, it was God's will for us to not go out that day. So we'd have to turn around and go home. Oh, dear. All right. He also tried to force periods of fasting onto my mom because God spoke to him. She had to drink water out of the shower. This happened before I was born, though. He would go. Now, this next thing I don't quite understand, but we'll roll with it. He would go door to door collecting for animal ambulances. Hmm. However, he would just knock on the door and hold out a can and not speak at all to the people. Now, I've thought about an animal ambulance at some point, so I guess I can't say he's too crazy, but it would have been good if he at least talked to the people.
Yeah.
So it goes on to say, probably the craziest thing he did to me personally was strangle me.
Oh.
He shook me back and forth exactly like Homer from The Simpsons. Holy crap. I was 4 at the time. When I was 5, he became more of an alcoholic and his behavior became more like aggressive and mentally and physically abusive. My mom had to deal with the vast majority of his anger spells, but every now and then my dad would do something to me or my sister. It's hard to remember all the crazy family drama I had. For example, my aunt was transgendered and drug addiction problems always surrounded my family, but most of the drama related directly to my dad. I really wish I knew why he was like that. I'm 16 right now. Yeah. I don't really forgive him, but I don't blame him. I don't feel like it was his fault. I just don't understand why he's like that.
Yeah.
Especially because I do feel like he loves me and that nothing provoked this behavior. It's really hard to say that I love him or feel for him. And I feel really guilty about this.
Sure.
Ugh. It's heartbreaking. It's, you know, dad does have something definitely wrong with him. This is not normal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, what do you do? What the hell do you do in these situations?
I mean, if you have another place to go, maybe an aunt or an uncle or someplace that they understand what the hell's going on. I've seen people do that. Other than that, you don't have a lot of recourse when you're 16 years old. No. There's a lot of having to deal with it. because there's not a lot that's going to stop it unless that dad decides to get his shit together. But I mean, being aware is half the battle, so that's good. And just, you know, continue to be aware of what's going on. It'll help you understand it. It'll help you get through it more, and it won't be such a shock when you are finally away from it. You can already identify just kind of how fucked up things were and really focus on you. You know, you're 16. That's good. You know, find more productive things to do outside of the house. And it's not going and, you know, drinking and partying with friends. Get into something. Get into a passion. Get into an interest that is going to benefit you. And spend a lot more time there. You got an excuse to do it. You're old enough to drive. Go fucking live in that passion or hobby. I didn't have alcoholic parents or anything like that, but they drove me up a fucking wall. I do love them, but they drove me up a fucking wall. And I got a job at the radio station, and I practically fucking lived there from 14 to 18.
And you've got to find something else to do outside of the house.
Yeah, I found something that I could do that wouldn't make me crazy. And I enjoyed it. And it really wasn't destructive. It was fun. I enjoyed it. So, I mean, try and find something like that, because, again, there's just not a lot of options that are there that are going to help you. I mean, unless there's, ongoing physical abuse that can be proven. That's a difficult road, because the child protective services and stuff, they walk away from a lot of things that clearly shouldn't be walked away from, but the rules of which they abide by and operate on don't allow them to necessarily take the steps that common sense would say to take.
Yeah. And I worry that, you know, if dad thinks that God is speaking to him, dad's got some issues that need to be dealt with. And we're dealing with probably some mental illness here.
Yeah.
I'm really concerned about the strangling part.
Yeah.
If that continues, you need to do something.
Yeah. That right there, my fear on that, because it clearly is something very horrible. My concern with that would be is trying to, you know, report that and prove that. The problem would be you go and try and prove that and go after him. He's likely there's not going to be anything. He's going to be more angry at you.
Yeah. You know, I wonder, you know, you've got two more years until you can get out, but I like your idea of maybe seeing if there's another family member that you can go stay with when things are getting out of control. Somebody that you can turn to in the family, just to protect yourself. And, you know, none of this is your fault.
No, but get out of there as much as you possibly can. And if there's more to this story that we're unaware of, where, you know, this could be shown and you could get away somewhere safer, then by all means, yeah, it should be reported and that should be looked into. But in reality, that's where a lot of people pause and go, yes, in a perfect world that would be dealt with, but we're not in a perfect world. And my gut from what I'm hearing here is it'd be reported and then you'd have a drunk, angry father still more mad at you. And again, you got to get help some way, shape or form to get out of that situation. Just careful where you tread so it doesn't get worse for you.
Yeah. And half the battle is recognizing that your family has some issues and at least you're aware of it. And that's half the battle, is recognizing it and being able to protect yourself from it.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. Completely. Thank you for sharing that story with us. We do greatly appreciate it. And that right there is going to wrap up today's episode of My Crazy Family. Be sure to share your crazy family stories with us. Go to crazyfampod.com right in there. Or you can call in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All you got to do is pick up the phone and give us a buzz. I'm trying to load the page because I haven't done
it. It is 1-833-272-9326.
There we go.
Or, well, as you like to say, 833-CRAY-FAM.
There you go. 833-CRAY-FAM or 833-272-9326. We'd love to hear your stories. Until next time, for Stacey, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to My Crazy Family.
My crazy
family.
Family.
My
crazy
family.